A. Mueller v. Astru, 12-2657. Mr. Schultz.
It pleases the Court, Your Honors, Mr. Martin. Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Talbot Mueller. This is another Social Security disability claim. In this claim, plaintiff argues that the ALJ did not sufficiently consider Ms. Mueller's obesity in determining her residual functional capacity. Ms. Mueller was 5 feet 4.5 inches tall and weighed.
That have to do with the weight of the evidence? Or...
Yes, it does. I'm glad you made that joke and not me. She weighed between 260 and 280 pounds, which is a body mass index of over 45, which is considered extreme obesity. The ALJ mentions or says that he considered her obesity and that he recognized that obesity can aggravate limitations caused by other impairments. But then in his discussion of the residual functional capacity, he doesn't mention obesity, and he does not indicate how he considered it. And Social Security ruling 02-1P specifically states that the administrative law judge or that the administration at all the levels of review must explain the weight that they give to the consideration that they give to a claimant's obesity. In this case, it's particularly problematic because the ALJ relies on the opinion of the non-examining state agency doctor, Dr. Patey, for the residual functional capacity. He adopts Dr. Patey's assessment. But nowhere in Dr. Patey's report does that doctor mention that the claimant is obese. He doesn't mention the claimant's weight. He doesn't mention her height. He does not indicate that he takes that into consideration. So while he considered her musculoskeletal impairments, of spinal stenosis and hip arthritis and degenerative disc disease in the lumbar spine, he doesn't indicate that he also considered obesity. So his opinion really does not support the administrative law judge's residual functional capacity assessment in this case. Now, the district court held that one could infer that Dr. Patey must have known about the claimant's obesity because he reviewed a couple of treatment notes that included her weight. Plaintiff asserts that that's not a reasonable inference. In fact, it's the opposite is the more reasonable inference because Dr. Patey mentions that he reviewed one of the treatment notes and it showed that the claimant's lungs were clear. Therefore, there wasn't a significant problem with her asthma. So he made some specific notations from the treatment notes, but he doesn't mention the fact that she weighed 280 pounds, which was just stated in one little place up at the top of that treatment note.
Mr. Schultz, the medical records indicate that the plaintiff sprained her ankle from jumping at one point in the relevant period here. Is there any further elaboration in the record on what happened?
There is not. There's no questions asked at the hearing about that. There's no detail about that in the record.
It seems improbable.
It does seem improbable, yes. Especially because she was not even able to squat or go up on her toes or heels during the physical examination.
Did any doctor make a finding about the plaintiff's capacities that implies a finding of disability?
No, they did not. There's no opinion from a doctor as to the claimant's functional capacity in this case.
Did any doctor disagree with Dr. Patey's opinion on residual functional capacity?
No doctor disagreed.
Okay.
But in these cases, a plaintiff is not required to submit an opinion from a treating doctor. And the administrative law judge, in determining residual functional capacity, has to consider the entire record, which includes opinions from doctors, but also the claimant's testimony, her daily activities, especially in a case like this where the ALJ finds that the claimant's impairments can, in fact, cause the symptoms that she alleges. So since the symptoms are reasonable, then the question is, well, why is this claimant limited in the specific way that she is? And this court has held now in numerous cases that that's an important consideration because a claimant who has musculoskeletal problems is likely to be experience greater limitation if they also have obesity, and in this case, extreme obesity. And those are cases like the Villano case and Arnett and Gentle and the Barrett case, which we cite in our brief. They all pretty much say the same thing, that the ALJ has to consider that and provide some explanation.
Let me ask you this. Was there any clarification on how often she needed to use that walker? There was reference that, I think she testified that she used it a lot. Was that broken down?
No. She testified at the hearing that she had to use either a cane or a walker all the time for balance. And that kind of gets to the next issue, which is the ALJ's credibility finding, because plaintiff's analysis of the ALJ's decision is that the ALJ actually does not provide any analysis of Ms. Mueller's credibility. He does provide a summary of her testimony, but a summary is not an analysis. It doesn't provide any basis for why the ALJ ruled the way he did. He noted that Ms. Mueller stated that she used a walker and that she used a cane. He noted that she testified her legs would swell if her feet were down for too long and she had to elevate them. When she testified, she had to elevate them to waist height. He recognized that she testified to dizziness caused by her medications. But then he doesn't provide any analysis of whether he accepts that testimony or not. He just relies on the boilerplate language that this court has said is not acceptable. And then he concludes at page 63 of the administrative record that in sum, the above residual functional capacity assessment is supported by the objective evidence as well as claimant's activities, including caring for her parents. But those activities, he doesn't say what's inconsistent about her activities and her testimony. What she did for her mother was 3 hours a day, and Ms. Mueller testified that she felt like she had worked a 16-hour day after doing the 3 hours helping out her aged mother. She would sit a lot. She had to rest in between the tasks that she performed. And if you really break down the ALJ's decision, there's no explanation in the decision of why he found the claimant not credible or why he discredited any specific aspects of her testimony.
Mr. Schultz, could you just remind me, what was her work history before the claim?
She did a couple of different things. She worked as assisting elderly patients and assisting disabled patients, going to their homes and checking blood pressure, things like that.
And then didn't she also do some lifting of paper?
Yes, there was a courier job, and she had to lift 45 to 50 pounds doing that.
And then how long was that? Did that job last?
I think it lasted 3 years, okay. But I'm not certain about that yet.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Martin?
Good morning. May it please the Court, John Martin on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. I'd just like to respond to a couple of the points that were already made. I think the most crucial point in this case is that we have one medical opinion in this case. That is the medical opinion of the state agency reviewing physician, Dr. Patey. The ALJ reasonably relied on that opinion, and as the ALJ pointed out, there is no contrary opinion in this record. So there's no opinion, as Judge Hamilton asked, that contradicts Dr. Patey. Therefore, the ALJ is entitled to rely on that opinion, and that opinion says this person can do light work. As far as the credibility finding goes, we do want to acknowledge that the ALJ did use the template that this court has been critical of.
However, going back to Dr. Patey, he didn't actually examine her, correct?
No, that's correct. But as Judge Hamilton asked, there's no opinion pointed out in the questioning here, there's no opinion from a doctor who did actually examine her who said that she couldn't do the things Dr. Patey said she could do. In addition, as is typically the instance in these Social Security cases, a claimant files for benefits and the agency sends that person out for a consultative examination. That's what the agency did here, and Ms. Mueller saw Dr. Villanueva. Roughly a month later is when Dr. Patey reviewed the record. So Dr. Patey essentially relied mainly on Dr. Villanueva's examination, and that's where those findings came from. So in answer to your question, no. Dr. Patey's a state agency reviewer. Dr. Patey does not examine. But Dr. Patey relied on a doctor who did examine Ms. Mueller. Now, I think another point that was brought out is the issue of her past work. And that job as a courier, I think, is significant. I think she performed that for 2 years. But she testified, and the ALJ elicited this testimony, that that job did involve significant lifting of up to 40 to 45 pounds. She said she had trouble doing it, but then she said they hired a person to help her, and she ended up helping that person. So she certainly did significant lifting. Another important point to remember about that job is that's the last job she did before she alleged disability. She didn't allege that she stopped doing that job as a result of her back impairment or as a result of obesity or of any of these impairments she's alleged to sustain. She testified that she stopped performing that job because the van was totaled and she just didn't have access to a means to perform the job anymore. And that's a factor that an ALJ is supposed to look at in assessing the credibility of a claimant, the factor of why the claimant left her job. Another job that she had was a job, as Mr. Schultz said, working with disabled individuals. Ms. Mueller testified that she left that job because she got into a disagreement with someone or she mouthed off to someone. So again, you have a claimant here who's left two jobs, neither one of which was because of her impairments.
Mr. Martin, let me ask you, what concerns me here is at least as I understand the way the bureaucracy works, a Social Security ruling is issued when the central administration sees a troublesome issue and is trying to impose some consistency on its treatment nationwide. Mm-hmm. And we've got this Social Security ruling dealing with the handling of obesity, which obviously can affect especially muscular skeletal problems in lots and lots of ways. And it's a little hard to see how this ALJ complied with that Social Security ruling, even if the case otherwise looks like it's a pretty weak claim for disability because of the absence of medical evidence.
Well, the ruling asks the ALJ to consider obesity, and the ALJ said that he did consider obesity, and I think the ALJ also said that he realized that obesity can affect the type of impairments that Ms. Mueller has.
Okay, that's at least a nod in the direction. Is that enough?
I think it is in this case, Your Honor, because in this case, claimant has not really shown any instance in which a doctor has said your walking is limited because you have obesity or your lifting is limited because you have obesity. I think one of you asked before about this need to use, I think Judge Williams asked about the need to use a walker. And the report that the ALJ relied on, the report from Dr. Villanueva that Dr. Patey interpreted, I acknowledge that in a doctor's examination, they're not walking very far, but Dr. Villanueva said she walked without the use of an assistive device during the examination. The other point I think I can make on this is that when the ALJ posed questions to the vocational expert, first he said, here's the RFC, here's the residual functional capacity set out by Dr. Patey, what jobs can she do? The vocational expert identified three jobs. Then the ALJ said, even if she needs to use a handheld device, how many jobs can she do? And the vocational expert said, I'd eliminate one of those jobs, but she can still do the other two jobs. Also, this person is under 50, and therefore she can be not disabled if she can perform sedentary work. The vocational expert identified sedentary jobs that Ms. Mueller could perform. I see my light is on. So I would also like to point out just one more thing. In this case, the district court right up front said the question always in these Social Security cases is whether the ALJ said enough. And as I think we said in the first case, there's always something more an ALJ can say. But the district court confronted that question, said, did the ALJ say enough here, wrote a long 42-page painstaking decision, and concluded that the ALJ did indeed say enough. And on that basis,
as
I would ask
somebody who writes some pretty long opinions from time to time, I'll just say I also thought the district court said enough.
Okay. On that basis, I would ask the court to affirm the ALJ's decision. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Martin. Mr. Schultz, you have 2 minutes.
Th-
plaintiff does not believe that the ALJ said enough because he made a conclusory statement which is really unreviewable by this court. How does the court know? Dr. Patey doesn't mention Ms. Mueller's obesity, and the ALJ adopts his residual functional capacity finding, while at the same time the ALJ says that he recognizes that obesity can aggravate limitations caused by other impairments. So if that's the case, why did he adopt the opinion of a doctor who did not consider the plaintiff's obesity? He provides no explanation for that. In addition, while it's the plaintiff's testimony, there is at page 419, there is a doctor's note indicating that Ms. Mueller needs a laminectomy. So here's a woman who has moderate spinal stenosis who needs a laminectomy and who is morbidly extremely obese. Then she testified that she went for a second opinion to a doctor at Northwestern Hospital, and he indicated that she should wait to have the surgery until she lost weight. And she'd been trying to lose weight, and in the year prior to the hearing, she had been able to only lose 10 pounds because she's so limited in her ability to exercise because of her condition. So I think that's some evidence that the obesity does actually affect her. She needed a laminectomy. The testimony was that she had to call every month, this was, I believe, to Stroger, to find out where she was on the waiting list. And every month they told her, yes, you're on the waiting list, call back next month, which she would do. Then she went for the second opinion. So her obesity seemed to have prevented her. Well, one, her inability to get the surgery was a problem, but then the obesity from the second doctor prevented her from, at that point, being able to have the surgery. So there's a question of someone who needs a laminectomy, what kind of pain, stiffness, et cetera, would they be experienced given not only the objective evidence, but their obesity, and that was not analyzed in this claim. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schultz. We'll take the case under.